You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. What a huge result we saw at Goodison Park regarding the implications for the title race. Everton beating Liverpool by 2-0. Branthwaite would get the end after a big old scramble in the box. And a great header from Calvert-Lewin into the second half would see Everton take all 3 points. Liverpool, meanwhile, what does that mean? Well, obviously, we talk about the match, analyse it, but I suppose the big question to you, Stevie, is it over?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty simple. No question. After losing at home to Crystal Palace, that made a huge dent in it. But to lose this game, realistically, you can't expect Arsenal or Man City to lose two games, because that's what's going to have to happen.
Right.
That's not happening.
Let's welcome in Frank LaBeouf. Apologies, Frank. I forgot to introduce you to Everett. Do you agree with Stevie? It's over.
Well, I wouldn't be 100% sure it is over, because everybody can make mistakes on the other side. But I agree, you will need two loses from the others. But when you don't put ingredients at the end of the game for the end of the championship in the race of a possible title, it means something. And today, Liverpool were nowhere near it. It was a derby. You have to have the pride. You have to be a warrior. And we saw nothing of that. On top of it, they were sometimes clumsy, sometimes not tuned in. And we saw TAA on the goal, that the second goal they conceded. Darwin Núñez, I agree with Craig. Why he shot on Pickford when you have like 4 or 5 yards free? So, some details that you can see that Liverpool weren't the Liverpool that we know. And maybe it's why I think it can be over very, very soon.
They kind of were the Liverpool that we know, that we've come to know over the last few weeks.
Yeah, so in that sense, it wasn't a huge surprise. Yeah, it was a Merseyside derby, so there's a great, good atmosphere there. They're fighting for their lives, so there's not any sort of mid-table mediocrity end of season about it. And that always adds an extra bit of spice. But, you look at the shockers recently, you know, in no particular order, Atalanta at home. Atalanta away wasn't fantastic, but it was a win. But, you know, that game was pretty much over. Crystal Palace at home. Fulham away early, which wasn't great. But they got the job done, and that's all you can ask for. But forgetting even the Man United. The Man United 2-2, which was, I don't know, the couple of games against United have really startled them.
Yeah.
You know, the FA Cup game that was extra time, they lost 4-3, and then this game where young Konsa made a mistake and out of nowhere Bruno Fernandes scores, and it's just sort of piled on from there, and it's not been great. And Stevie mentioned it a couple of days ago, was even at Fulham when they dug out a win, was Klopp never really raised the gallop. You know, he wasn't in his technical area much, he wasn't screaming and shouting, he wasn't gesticulating. There was a little bit of that again today, and even in his after-match interview, I mean, he was pretty honest. He said, look, you're just not good enough and blah, 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 all those sort of stuff, all that sort of stuff. But I'm almost feeling with him, there's the resignation that there's nothing left in the tank with the Salahs and Núñez and all these. And the manager himself, he's just looking as if he's dead beat. He's just knackered.
I think what's as disappointing as anything is that Liverpool at one stage, it seems not too long ago, were at the bare bones. They couldn't put a team out.
Yeah, Carabao Cup final, of course.
But yet they got over all of that.
Yeah.
And they got all over that. They won the cup. They found themselves at the top of the league. And then they're bringing the players back. And you're thinking, this is fantastic. To get through this period, having half your team missing and still be sitting top of the Premier League. And then you look at the fixtures and you think, this is doable, no question. And you get yourself to the point that it's in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
But then it fell apart. And mostly, in my opinion, it fell apart because, for some reason, the front players, particularly Salah, particularly Nunes, have absolutely disappeared off the face of the earth. I mean, we saw Nunes with a chance in the highlight. What we didn't see was there was a ball. He was standing at the top of the box on his own. There was a ball fired into him. All he had to do was take it and get a strike off at goal. He completely miscontrolled it. He actually ended up salvaging it by putting it back to Mo Salah, who then put it 40 yards over the crossbar. It really, just in that little passage, summed up what Liverpool have been going forward.
We talk about Arsenal and the pressure on them, leading from the top, being top of the table. Talks about it's easier to chase. Did that hit Liverpool? Because when they went top, when destiny was in their own hands, when they beat Brighton, and of course City and Arsenal drew, since then, when they had destiny, when they could have won out and won it, things have gone really south quick.
I really don't think it was pressure, to be honest. It's just complete loss of form. And I said it last week.
So why is it pressure for Arsenal but not Liverpool?
No, but I'm just saying that Liverpool... Look at Nunes and Salah, and Nunes in particular. I mean, one of the reasons that they were at the top of the league was because this guy looked as though he had found it. But then he's completely lost it just like that. But then he got injured, as did Salah. And then when they come back, they're obviously not the same, but then the confidence is shot. I don't see it as pressure. Listen, Liverpool, for me, all season, I couldn't figure out why they were sitting top of the league. Because all season, they've been giving up chances and giving up goals. Mm. I mean, today, the commentators told you today that this was the 15th game this season they'd gone behind. That's almost half a season.
You can't keep doing that.
So you can't keep doing it and getting away with it. And then you add on the fact that your forward line just can't buy a goal, other than penalty kicks or set pieces, then you're never going to win anything. And that's why they're out of four competitions.
I always felt with Liverpool as good as it was from last year. And listen, hey, you can't give this one up. You know what I mean? Like, Arsenal lost to Villa, and City have got two games in hand, and they haven't looked brilliant, but it's four games to go for Liverpool, and Arsenal's a body blow. Hmm. But I've always felt they're kind of off the cuff, sort of hear 'em, scare 'em, losing goals approach, pleasing on the eye, sort of the way they've gone about it. For a lot of the time, but this season in particular, I always felt that was going to catch up with them at some point. And the more structured team in Arsenal, and certainly City, were going to come through in the end. And they're kind of finding that out a little bit. But I just wonder as well, you know, Mo Salah, he went off to the African Cup of Nations, didn't really feature much, got injured, came back, got himself fit. He's been back in the side and back fit long enough now. He's just, I don't know, Is he affected by the fact the manager said he's going? He's now thinking about what's going to be for him in the summer. Big payday, another big payday in Saudi Arabia, whatever it is, because, man, he's just... You talk about a player who's just completely gone off the boil. I mean, we used to see all these sort of, amateurish touches and shots from him.
Yeah, but then there'd be something brilliant.
Even when he was scoring, even when he's posting these great numbers, which he has all of his Liverpool career, we always still saw within games, within periods, these little phases where he would do something, you go, is this the guy that's scoring 20, 30 goals a year? And then he'd pop up, something out of this world brilliant. He's doing the other side of it. He's left the brilliant side of it behind, so that bit of magic is not there.
How much is Jurgen Klopp announcing that he'll leave at the end of the season a factor in all of this?
It's very difficult to go one way or the other, Dan, because the obvious thing to do would be that, and we had reports that Van Dijk had gotten everybody in and said, right, let's push on for the manager. I mean, in some ways...
Is that then not added pressure as well?
I don't...
Yeah, but hold on, they went great guns when since when he announced it, up until the last 3 weeks, it was going. It was...
Carabao Cup final, we mentioned, of course, youngsters coming in, everything working out.
It galvanised them. Yeah. I don't think it's that. I think it galvanised them. I think what it is, they're just not quite as a unit, as a squad, good enough.
No. Right.
No. They're in the top three teams in the Premier League. Unfortunately, they're the third. And that's where they are.
So long-term, we'll talk about Arne Slot obviously in a moment, but long-term with this squad, Darwin Nunez, Diaz, Salah maybe moving on. There's a lot of question marks, isn't there, about...
I think the biggest question, Mark, for me would be Nunez.
You know, at the end of the day...
Well, has he not answered? He's answered it, really, hasn't he? Over the, this, like, when you needed him the most, when you needed him to stand up, he just let you down.
Yes. And that's the biggest question. So how do you move on a guy who you paid $80 million for and who has a big wage? So that's a problem. You know, if Salah does go, then you use the money.
Yeah.
And I said before, you can move Nunez White and get yourself an Osimhen or a proper another centre-forward. But then again, you know, we're sitting here this time last year, we're talking about the middle of the park, how that's the problem.
Yes, yeah.
No, the middle of the park's fine to me. The problem's the back line and the front line.
But look at your fullbacks today. Robertson had a shocker, and Alexander-Arnold once again. You could point at both goals, so he's at fault for them.
Yeah.
Is there an argument you have to move on from that as well?
Well, yes. The back line has not been secure this year, and Van Dijk's only got a year left. What's going to happen with him? So. Listen, they're going to have to have a real sit down and figure out where they're going to spend the money on. Are they going to spend the money on
Where would you spend the money on?
I would spend the money on the back line. You don't win titles without defending. Mm. You don't. You can't just keep outscoring the opposition every Saturday in order to win the title. You just don't. It doesn't harm. When you play against good teams, proper teams, you can't get away with that. I think you have to give Nunez a little bit more time. But I'm saying that without being really confident that he can go back to what he was. There was a little spell in mid-season where he looked like a centre-forward. And you think, oh, he's got over the hump. But since that time to now, since he got injured... Mm. He looks as though he's the Nunez that joined us. But again, you have to... I don't think they're in a position where they're basically going to bin him. I think you've got to give him a little bit more time. But I would start at the back, absolutely. You don't win titles if you don't defend. And Liverpool absolutely haven't been defending.
So we've discussed a lot over recent weeks as to who will come in, who will take charge... Have Liverpool won Jurgen Klopp leaves at the end of the season? We mentioned this yesterday, Mark Ogden reporting it. It's got more and more attention today. Arne Slot is the favourite to make that move from the Eredivisie to Liverpool. He won, of course, with Feyenoord last season, the Eredivisie Championship. He won the Dutch Cup this year. How do you feel, Stevie?
Underwhelmed, no?
Aye. I mean, is that the resume of somebody to lead a club the size of Liverpool back to the Premier League title and the Champions League? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't honestly say that. All the other boxes have been ticked. The way they play the game, the way he goes about it. You know he's going to be able to coach. But is it really a resume to take over one of the biggest clubs in the land? I'm not sure it is, but what are the alternatives?
The problem is he's taking over one of the best clubs in the land when they're on a dip, and then we've talked about, you know, the players, the squad rotation that needs to happen, the freshening up, and you're following Jurgen Klopp as well.
Well, when Liverpool decided they were going to replace Brendan Rodgers, they went out and they made a statement, didn't they? And I know he was on a hiatus at the time, and he'd had that... he finished at Dortmund... not badly, but he finished, well, it was pretty bad compared to the previous years. But he was taking a break. But when they announced him, people sat up, didn't they? And they went, yeah, this is, you know, well, you're never sure, but this is exciting. And I think that's difficult to find that guy again. And so who knows? You know, you give everybody a chance, you know, whether it's De Zerbi coming in to Brighton or Areola coming in at Bournemouth. There should be none of this absolute guff that we hear about knowing the Premier League and,
sure,
you know, knowing English football and blah, blah, because the game has really gone past that. Ultimately, it's, you know, with the recruitment strategies of a lot of clubs now, it's not quite as simple as it used to be about knowing players in a particular country. So you have to give these guys time. That being said, it kind of feels like they've gone round the houses, Liverpool, and gone... Right, Nagelsmann, he's gone to jail. Even got Bayern, Deserbi.
But don't you think the Klopp appointment in itself was a no-brainer, really?
You know, Klopp had been to a Champions League final. Klopp had knocked Bayern off the perch. So it really was kind of no-brainer.
That's what I mean. You sat
up. This one's difficult, don't you think? Because there's no obvious. There's not a Klopp. Number one, as you said, there's not a Klopp out there. So now you're going to have to dig into whatever to try and figure out who the right man is. And it seems like Arne Slot's the guy that they've decided on for all of those reasons.
I'm sure a lot more on Arne Slot on the next edition of the show. Manchester City taking on Brighton, of course, tomorrow. A big game then for Pep Guardiola. Drop points, of course, could really open the door for Arsenal to go on and win the title.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Manchester United had to come from behind to beat Sheffield United, but in the end it is a 4-2 victory for Ten Hag's side. What that means? Well, they sit sixth from the table at the moment. Long way off, though, still a Champions League place. 13 points adrift of Villa, 7 of Spurs. Craig, good character from United, no? Can we sell that? Look, as much as we've jumped on them over the last few days.
It is good.
Look, you're 3-2, or you're 2-1 down. Everyone's having a go at you. You can feel like...
Did you see who they were playing against?
Yes, no, I understand that. I understand
this
that.
This team, I think today, Sheffield United broke the Premier League record for goals conceded in the season.
So my positive outlook...
And there's still four games to go.
Let's just put it down.
You're 2-1 down, you go on, you win 4-2. Oh,
let's just put it down. On. Let's just put it down in a win's a win category.
Yeah.
Great goal from Bruno Fernandes on the 80th minute mark. It was 2-2 at that point against the side at home, against the side bottom in the Premier League, who, by the way, accumulated 6 points on the road this season. That tells you all you need to know, and it was a match for 80 minutes. And yes, United got it done, but you know, we were sitting there watching the Merseyside derby and this, and you're thinking, no, it can't. Guys, there's no way. You can't drop points or even lose to Sheffield United at home. It's not possible.
They tried to.
So, yeah, a win's a win. And, you know, I'm sure he'll go to the press conference and eulogise Erik Ten Hag about this. There's no words can describe it other than 3 points.
But, Frank, look, Manchester United players fighting for their coach's future.
Really? Well, I didn't see that for 80 minutes, you know. good for them. You got the 3 points. Ten Hag is happy. I saw his press conference after the game. He said that the players did what they had to do. No, I'm sorry. We are talking about Manchester United playing against Sheffield United at home. So you can have a hard time to win, but you cannot be leaded twice and almost thrice, because if just on the deflected shots were scored, it would have been a different story as well. So we are talking again about Manchester United, the history of many years in the Premier League. So you cannot deny that there is a problem for me. It's not Manchester that we used to know. And when you see them playing that way, yeah, it's good because Fernandes woke up and scored two goals and made a beautiful assist as well. It's why they won. But otherwise, we saw sometimes no difference between, and again, no difference between Sheffield United and Manchester United. That's a questionable.
Anyone else want to say anything else?
Well, it's actually interesting that it's one of the few games this season, and particularly at home, that Man United can actually call themselves, in terms of possession stats, dominant.
Right.
Which hasn't happened very often, which kind of tells you the state that Sheffield United are in. They're not relegated yet.
No, but they're all a bit down.
But, that's just...
Yeah. Stephen, would you like to add?
No, thank you.
Right, OK. Let's focus on what happened.
Well, where's the positive?
Well, I'm the positive, apparently. That's it. Of course, yesterday, a lot of positives for Arsenal, a lot of negatives. Meanwhile, for Chelsea, Kai Havertz, very much the man who grabbed all the headlines on the back page. Frank, obviously, you weren't on yesterday. As good as Arsenal were, Chelsea were rancid, weren't they?
Oh yeah, from start to bottom, that was an horrendous performance. Yeah, Cole Palmer wasn't there. Yeah, Thiago Silva maybe didn't play. It's why maybe you can find some reasons of that horrendous performance. But that first credit to Arsenal, they put all the ingredients needed to thrash and to smash Chelsea. It's nice for Kai Havertz, I'm not expecting him to stay quiet and not celebrating his goals. That I don't care. You change the club and you have the right to celebrate, that's what it is. But again, I saw, when you bring your son on Sunday morning to watch a game and you see all the kids making mistakes, sometimes it was that, really, from Chelsea. I said, what the hell are they doing? How come you do that mistake at that level? But we all know, and we say that so many times for the past 2 years, that we have to wait for them to grow. And that's the bet that the club made. And meanwhile, you keep the shame, you put the head down, and if you are a fan, you have to be very, very patient.
Do you want Pochettino out, Frank?
Positive of what?
Sacked.
At any point? No. Sorry?
Do you want him sacked?
Posh? No, because, he has to take responsibility for what we see, but because he knew what he would get when he signed for the club. That, for me, when he signed, I already said it was impossible to heal from there. That's my concern about that. Why do you sign if you know that there is nothing much to do? And instead, you say to the club, okay, I come, but I want two experienced players. And we know that. I know my former coach, friends of Craig, Ruud Gullit, said that was horrible to see them playing against Arsenal, but also Manchester City, because they don't know what to do. But it's just normal. You take kids, you put, and that was the case against Arsenal, 11 of them, not ready, not mature enough, and ready to blow in any case because they don't know how to handle a pressure, and it's what you have. And the result of the 5-0 is what you were looking for. And you just have to wait to grow. But getting rid of Posh won't resolve the problem because the next coach will have the same problem.
Stevie, obviously you went here yesterday, you watched the game. How do you explain that second half?
Do you know, I was thinking about it yesterday and I started thinking about... So without Thiago Silva in the team, this team's average age is 23. And I was thinking, what was I like at 23? Well, I wasn't a regular in the Liverpool team. I thought that when I was 23, that I played 35 games. 15 of them, or half of them, were off the bench and half of them I started. And the reason was because I wasn't ready.
Right.
I wasn't ready. I was learning the game. And I was getting added, and the fact that I was playing wasn't affecting the rest of the team because we had an experienced outfit, we had a good mix of some superstars, some fantastic players, and a couple of young guys, including myself. Now, by the time I was 25, I was a completely different player. All of those things that I had learned between 83, 84 and 85, 86, I was a different player. I was the finished article.
I knew how to turn up every game and be at a certain level. I knew my preparation inside out. I knew every single thing. I'd figured out when to play it, when to pass it, when to run with it, when to drop off. All of these things you're learning all the time. And unfortunately for Chelsea, they've got a team that's learning while they're playing. So, surprise, surprise. One minute they're up there, the next minute they're down there. So they've got no chance. And you can't turn around and blame the manager for that because he didn't bring the players in. So getting rid of Pochettino is going to do nothing.
But a lot of these players have got a lot more experience at that age than I would say maybe you had at that level, at that age. The game's kind of different in that sense because, you know, back when he was going to, was he in Liverpool in the 80s and I was at Chelsea in the 90s when Frank was there. If you saw players, and not all the time, if you saw players in another team, at, you know, if a pundit was on the TV and there was a 21-year-old playing, you kind of sat back a little
right,
bit. And
right.
Oh, 20.
And now we've got Lamine Yamal, we've got players like
and
that.
And now it doesn't seem even 21 is young for today's age group of players and how they are brought up and how the training is and the facilities and all the help they get. So I kind of think when they get to 23 now, it's like, you know, that's 23 is like to me what 18 and 19 was, or maybe 20. Because there is so many of them now coming. And I understand that is when they're all together, but they've got a lot of experience. Okay, look at it another way. What are they doing in the summer? How many are going to get better? How many are going to be good enough? How many do they have to replace? Because if you look at the ones they need to replace, Sterling would need replaced, doesn't play regular. Madueke's probably a squad player. Nico Jackson needs replaced. Obviously, Cole Palmer doesn't. You maybe hang your hat on the £200 million worth of midfielders. Then you're relying on the two centre-halves coming good. You're then relying on Chilwell being fit because Cucurella's not been brilliant. And you're relying on Reece James getting over all these fitness issues he's got, or it's young Malo Gusto. There are so many questions. And I hear Man United fans going, what's the difference? What's the difference between this pathetic Chelsea side and this pathetic United side? Mm. And sometimes it is hard to argue. You could argue the age. One side of it would be it's Pochettino's first season. It is Ten Hag's second. These are small mitigating factors, but there isn't much difference to say why one is getting pressure to get results and one seems to be getting less, apart from it's his first year. I can't offer you up any more excuses right. than that, really.
Last word on this to you, Frank.
Yeah, just coming back to what Craig just said before, the 23 years old now seems to be older than the 23 of years old of Stevie because they start earlier. But what I want to say is this Chelsea team, for 23 years old, they had no experience before. We don't know Mudrić. Badiashile and Disasi just started with Monaco and signed for Chelsea, so they have no experience whatsoever. We Nicolas Jackson had one good season in Villarreal, but he's a one-year-old, we say, in the top football. So it's like those players who just started, and I'm with Stevie. They will need some years to learn, but if they are with other players, with more mature players, then maybe it's going to work. And the difference between Manchester United and Chelsea is Manchester United, they have experienced players. They have Rashford, they have Fernandez, they have Casemiro, they have so many others. They should build on that. Chelsea, they have nothing to build on.
Frank will be back with us on Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel as we answer some of your questions. A lot about Don have come in since his appearance, obviously, at Goodison Park. Oh, the band music, the posh music can only mean one thing. It's the FA Cup final, Manchester United against Manchester City, live on ESPN Plus, Saturday, May the 25th. Our coverage starts at 9 a.m. Eastern. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right then, Xavi is staying as Barcelona coach next season. Ravi Yuste, the Barcelona vice president, says Xavi will stay. He's really happy. Opened talks for any other coach. Also, Deco, trust Xavi. It is guaranteed. Frank's still with us. We welcome in from Madrid. Alex Kirkland joins us. Alex, how much was this a case of, like, Xavi's here, Rafa Marquez is there, we can't afford anyone else, we may as well just stick with him?
Yeah, well, listen, we're going to hear from Joan Laporta, we think, tomorrow on Thursday, giving his reasons publicly, or at least the reasons that he's willing to give publicly, which may not be exactly the same thing. So we'll hear a little bit more and have a better understanding then of the club's thinking. I think we've got to think about this in terms of what the club are after and what Xavi wants and why the club have made the decision and why Xavi has gone with it. In terms of Xavi, remember, when he made this big call to announce that he was going, he talked about the negative atmosphere around the team. He talked about the lack of support that he was getting. Now, those things have changed. That situation has changed. The atmosphere has improved. He's now getting the support, certainly from the club, that he wasn't getting before, because rather than briefing that he might get sacked, they've been asking him to stay. In terms of the club, I think you're right. It's about looking at the finances. It's about looking at the alternatives and not being entirely convinced by any of them. Still, it's hard to not think that come next season, as we've talked about before, we might well be back in a similar situation. But right now, like I say, things have improved from where they were. Yes, they're out of the Champions League. Yes, they're not going to win La Liga, but the team has been playing better. They have been getting better results. There are a lot of reasons to be optimistic about this team. This team isn't that far away. You look at the talent they've got, the likes of Lamine Yamal and Kubasi and Gavi, if he's fit, and Pedri, if he can stay fit, and other players as well. They're not a million miles away from the team that won the league just a year ago with Xavi in charge. The other really interesting thing, I think, and the thing we don't know a lot about yet, or certainly enough details about yet, is what the content of these negotiations was between the club and Xavi today, in terms of what conditions the club tried to impose on Xavi and vice versa. I was talking about this evening with ESPN colleague Sam Marston, and there are some suggestions that the club have been looking to make some changes to how Xavi does things, and in particular, Xavi's coaching staff. Some elements of the way the team is coached, the way the team is prepared, that the club haven't been entirely happy about, haven't been convinced by, and they've been looking to say to Xavi, look, would you be willing to make certain changes in terms of personnel behind the scenes in order to stay? Like I say, we don't have the full details on that yet, but that's a really interesting aspect, I think, of this in terms of what these sort of talks were between Xavi and Laporta and Deco and others that have ended up with this outcome of Xavi staying until his contract is due to expire, as it always was in 2025.
Alex, are the fans happy with this?
It's hard to say. Of course, you know, still, we always say this, but still Xavi has so much in the bank because of what he was as a player, even what he did as coach. Because remember where they were when he came in, it was a mess. And he has made the team better and he has improved the team in all sorts of ways. And they did win a league title last season. And there have been some positives as well in the last few weeks. Of course, when it really came to it, when it came to the crunch, they blew it against PSG in the Champions League. And they blew it in El Clasico. And in El Clasico twice, in fact, this season in the league and again in the Super Cup. So in those really big moments, the team have been found wanting. But I haven't detected, at least here, a real sort of sentiment from fans here. Maybe it's different sort of internationally, maybe in what you see on social media, but from fans here in Spain, sort of calling for Xavi's head. I don't think that's necessarily been the case. Of course, they've been unhappy with aspects of the team and the way they've played and what hasn't been going well. But I don't think there's been a real sort of groundswell of anti-Xavi sentiment, certainly from fans here.
Stick with your instincts. His instincts were the pressure, yep. the expectations, the day-to-day, all the rigmarole of running this huge football club like a lot of managers go through. And he felt, along with results, that was too much for him, and that was his instincts. And who are we to argue with that? That was fine. You know, we all said, fine, no problem. Barcelona need to move on. And as Alex said, yeah, their fortunes have got better, but it was a low bar, wasn't it? I mean, the defending was absolutely horrendous. The chances of them starting to improve their defensive duties. And he did make some changes, bringing in the youngsters and moving some players like Christensen into midfield. So he takes some credit for that. But it's ironic, really. He's just lost two of the biggest games on the calendar.
This is it. Lost. Imagine if he hadn't announced he was leaving and he was still was going to be manager next season as well. He will be questioned whether or not he should be the man in charge.
He's just gone out to PSG and spare me the Ronald Araujo stuff, because, you know, things happen. He's got a dressing room that I think is already a little fracture that has been from Lewandowski, who was gibbering on from the start of the season. Then we had Ilkay Gundogan in the last 10 days calling out teammates. And then loses, as Alex said, two Clasicos. One that he had by the scruff of the neck. Well, maybe two he had by the scruff of the neck, but certainly one at the Montjuic. Bellingham steps up, gets a couple, and then this one here, talking about referees and everything again, and, you know, Bellingham scores the winner and is the flavour of the month again. But what, and Alex made the point, what happens if 6 weeks, 2 months into the season, it's all going pear-shaped, and then, I've had enough. Pressure. Everybody's on top of. We're back at square one. We've rolled the dice and we're back at the start. What's the point? I don't understand.
I nearly fell off my chair.
Did you?
Aye.
Yeah. Wow. Well,
that way, hold hopefully.
On, can you tell me, right? Can you tell me if the owners at Man City told Pep or told Mourinho or Klopp, we want you to stay, but we want you to change your coaching, the way you coach, and we want you to change your coaching staff? Are you serious? I mean, if there was ever a reason to run for the hills, that's it.
Because you're getting interference.
You are, absolutely. You talk about pulling a rug from under you. So basically now you're out there. Who's in charge?
Right.
Madness. Absolute madness.
Frank, how would you feel as a player about this?
Well, it depends if you're on the bench or if you're on the field. If you were on the bench under Xavi, you would be disappointed to not see him leaving. If you are in the first team, in the first 11, you're quite happy that he can stay. Well, you know, in my point of view, it's nice to see Xavi still at the head of that team, because he is really an icon of Barcelona and what Barcelona represents, and he knows the club. You know, maybe the fact that they didn't play at the Camp Nou as well, maybe an influence in the way that they prepare the game, the motivation of the players. It's not the same approach, I would say. I want to see something different from Xavi this next season, but he won the title. Like 10 months ago, he won the title. It's not like he was disappointing since he signed for the club. He did something good the first year. That wasn't good this year. He lost because of the second leg against Paris Saint-Germain, 10 against 11. He lost at the last minute in the Clásico. I think I'm going to see him again. I want to see if he can repair stuff and do something good.
Yeah, but one second. But when the pressure... This is the bottom line here with the managers, right? And we see Jurgen Klopp taking a step to the side because he's exhausted. Mm-hmm. Running football clubs top to bottom, a lot of these guys. Not like the old days when they were signing players and watching games, but you're still in there 7 days a week. And I understand, you know, Xavi wins the title. That his first year is fantastic. The second year, it takes a turn, and he has these injuries, and he's getting... And basically, he said, I can't take this.
No, he looked at a beaten man, didn't he?
And nobody thinks any worse of anybody if he say, no. "This, I just don't like this pressure. I don't like the expectations. I don't need to be spoken to like this. I don't need to read the newspapers giving me stick. I don't want it." And if you don't want it, don't do it. Because these guys, you know, all these top guys like Ancelotti and all these, year in, year out, they take the good with the bad, the peaks and the troughs, and they stay with it. Travis had one bad year in this job, and he wanted out. What's that tell you?
I mean, what's changed? The reasons that he said he was leaving... Nothing's changed.
The pressure's off now, isn't it? He's not getting the same media scrutiny.
But is he really that? Come on. Does he really think? Does he really think, oh, it's all right now?
Well, maybe
it won't matter what happens.
Maybe he's learned coping mechanisms, how to go forward, how not to let this affect him, how not to bring him down.
No.
No, but it is. Especially, as Craig said, off the back of being eliminated from the Champions League and losing El Clasico. One more thing for you, Alex, before I let you go. Tebas, who, of course, is the head of Spanish football, saying La Liga will play official matches abroad. I think it could be in the 2025-26 season. The official match in the US will strengthen our position in the North American market, which is the second for La Liga after Spain. Other very competitive leagues are coming, so we can't always do the same thing. They would overtake us. Obviously, the famous 39th game that was cited a few years ago, Alex, all the fan backlash meant that the Premier League backtracked over that. What's been the supporters' reaction over the last 24 hours to this announcement?
Yeah, we've never quite seen that same level of backlash here in Spain. And the first important thing to say is this is nothing new from Tebas. This is nothing new from La Liga. Remember back in 2018, 6 years ago, La Liga wanted to play Barcelona against Girona in Miami. La Liga, they made it official. They officially requested to play that game in Miami. The federation said no. It turned into a legal battle. Other bodies came out against it as well. In the end, Barcelona dropped out and La Liga stepped back and said, OK, we won't do this for now. But if you look back at what La Liga said, like I say, 6 years ago in 2018, they said specifically, as soon as possible, we will do this. So they've never shied away from this. This has always been a La Liga objective. As soon as the environment is right, there's also been this legal case going on in the US, which might go all the way up to the Supreme Court between US soccer and FIFA and Relevant, who promote La Liga in the US, in terms of the original decision not to allow that game to go ahead and the sort of the freedoms that might have been restricted there. So that's the environment around this. But like I say, this is nothing new from La Liga or Tebas. They've always wanted to do this. They've always talked about the importance of this in terms of the growth of the brands. They've always talked about looking to US sports as an example and the way that the, playing games abroad has worked for US sports. But in terms of the fan reaction, like I say, it's a little bit different here in Spain. The same thing we saw with the Super League. It's very similar, I would say, in terms of the sort of the visceral reaction we saw from fans in the Premier League. Just wasn't replicated here in Spain at all for all sorts of reasons. So it might well depend on the clubs involved, on the game. And this is just a comment from Tebas. La Liga, by the way, sources saying this is not an official announcement from Tebas. This was Tebas talking in an interview about an aspiration. But they do feel like they are heading in the right direction and that this is going to happen sooner or later.
Great stuff, Alex. As always, thank you very much. All La Liga games this weekend will be played in Spain across the 4 days. Real Sociedad against Real Madrid kick things off. And then on Sunday, we see the Seville derby. Real Betis against Sevilla. Monday, Barcelona against Valencia. All these games live on ESPN+.
One of them's getting played in the Canaries.
Oh, yeah?
Las Palmas.
Oh, that's Spain.
The Canaries.
It's still Spain, isn't it?
Gran Canaria.
Canary Islands isn't a country of its own.
I've made it a country.
That's it. Football Americas. We'll be discussing that in more detail on their show, which drops tomorrow.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
That was it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Frank is back to answer your questions on Extra Time.
Army,
Craig and Stevie as well.
Oh, boy.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time.
Oh, it's Frank.
Frank LaBeouf. is with us, Craig and Stevie as well. A lot of people messaging me throughout the Everton game as to whether or not I saw Don. Don was sat just behind Jurgen Klopp. People were very excited about this fact.
He was reading the programme, he was even watching the game.
But the funny was, when he looked at the screen and then he saw himself on, he like put the programme down and smiled.
Why do people get excited about somebody who works in TV being on TV?
Because they're out of their natural environment, isn't it? It's quite exciting to see them somewhere else.
At a game?
Oh, yes, exactly.
I bet Don was very excited, as Don usually
I'm sure he loved it.
He goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, exactly.
He's big into Everton.
Donny Don got a lot of camera time during the Liverpool-Everton game, sitting right behind the fourth official. How surprised you he wasn't caught picking his nose? I don't know about Don's hygiene's like.
He's well known for that.
You'd be in trouble for that, wouldn't you, Stevie? What impact did Klopp... we lost you, Frank, of course, because of technical issues in the Liverpool discussion. So I'll ask you this. What impact did the Klopp announcement have on the players, and was it a mistake to announce it during a title charge?
Well, it worked at first. You know, straight after the announcement, if I correctly remember, I think the team played very well straight after and they got very good results. And it's just now, and from nowhere, that that they started to have bad results. And as Stevie explained during the show, they had some players coming back from injuries. We thought that it would be perfect timing for Liverpool. They got some results. They got the Carabao Cup final against Chelsea, and they say, okay, they are launched to another title, and they collapsed, and nothing good happened. And it's like a fairy tale turning to a nightmare for Klopp. The end of an era turning bad at the end because nothing works right now. And I don't think it has to do with the fact that he announced before that he was leaving. For me, it's not the point. It's just the player performances, the momentum, and maybe the motivation of the players.
Stevie, what's Shaka's prediction of Liverpool winning the league when they started on their downward path?
Well, listen, the Shaka curse is absolutely back to his best.
Yeah, went to the Arsenal game, they lost 2-0 against Villa.
I mean, he can't argue about it. Every time he opens his mouth, it happens.
Something goes wrong.
It goes wrong.
Yeah.
Craig, is Liverpool stronger with Bradley rather than Trent Alexander-Arnold?
Oh. Hey.
Well, he did so many good things during the year, during the season.
Yeah.
But once he stops doing that, and then we saw a great free kick at Fulham at the weekend. But if those things kind of dry up and the great raking passes and all that, then you're now, it's a bit like, it's not quite the same. But I was talking about Nico Jackson yesterday, saying, right, when he's not scoring goals, which you may have noticed is quite often.
What else does he offer?
Then what else is he bringing to the party for your team? And the answer is, apart from running the channels, not a lot. So then, for Alexander-Arnold, if you're not getting down that side on a regular basis, and say Liverpool are dominant in a particular game on the left-hand side, that's just the way the game's panning out, then he's more of a defensive player.
Frank,
but the question, I mean, is he are they stronger with him? I mean, I don't know what the answer is to that, but...
Well, they're stronger with him going forward.
Yes.
Because of his ability with the ball.
Exactly.
But they're weaker from a defensive point of view,
right,
because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Frank, for that second...
you're saying a young guy is just better defensively than an England international. A guy who's literally just...
But he is, though.
...wet behind the ears.
That's what it is.
The problem is. But he is.
For the Calvert-Lewin header, Frank, is he thinking that Van Dijk's going to come and cover? Is that what's in his mind?
I don't know. I don't know what he thinks, because he turned his head to Calvert-Lewin, looks at him, so I guess he feels that he's going to get the ball, but doesn't come close to him. He doesn't come close to him. He doesn't want to go for the fight. And that's very strange, because you see, what went through his mind to not go there and try to disturb Calvert-Lewin? And I don't know, and I think it's just because he simply doesn't know how to defend. So to the question, for sure Bradley was better than TAA defensively. Offensively, I think there is no better players in this position than Trent Alexander-Arnold offensively. But if Liverpool doesn't dominate the game, it becomes kind of useless in that matter, because he doesn't know. He hasn't got any reflex. it's not natural for him to defend, and that's a problem.
We watched the after that goal. We watched the next corner that came in. It came from the other side. Mm-hmm. Stevie and I were watching him, and he took the same position at the other side. He was basically marking nobody outside the 6 yard box towards the other corner area, and. Maybe Jurgen Klopp's told him to mark that area in case somebody comes round the back, but I don't know. But what you do as a player, you think, right, I'm at the back of the 6 yard box here. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll have a look around, and if there's nobody here, then I'll tuck in a little bit right. and roll my sleeves up and help out. Or B, I'll just stand out there and let everybody else get on with it.
I mean, where he was standing is just. There's not a coach in the world who's going to tell you to do that.
Right.
Because the only ball that you ever give away coming from the other side is behind you. You don't give away what's in front of you. So it goes against every single thing that you're supposed to do, what he did in this game on more than one occasion.
And if you're marking like that, if you've got a player like that, right, if I've got a player, and I'm, you know, maybe he's better at marking at set pieces, he didn't show it tonight, but I got somebody who's maybe not the strongest. And instead of putting him there or instead of him go, I might as well put him in the post.
Right.
Have you got a spare one who's a liability? I put him.
The post is where you put them.
They don't put anybody in the post anymore, but I mean, most of them, I don't think.
Put him in the front.
Right.
Put him in the front. Then, really, he can't hurt you that much.
Goodness me.
But the fact that we've just spent some time talking about that and coming up with. Put him somewhere that it's not really that important because you can't trust him. That's where he is.
Question for Stevie. Is there an added pressure, we talked about this in the show, on these Liverpool players to win and send off Klopp on a high that seems to have played a negative role on them?
Nah, I don't know. I don't think that at all.
No?
No.
Frank, do you think that at all?
No. Again, it's almost the same question as before. I don't think he put pressure on the players. I think he... It's just the momentum right now. They lost it, and that's it.
For Frank, how would you deal if you were a centre-back at Manchester... Oh, sorry. All right, I've missed one. Sorry. Craig, will Xavi's manoeuvre become common practice for managers to release pressure in a crisis?
No.
They quit one week. Calm down, everyone. That's it. A couple of wins, then we're back on board.
No.
Have we ever... I can't remember if we've heard this happen before.
No.
Certainly not such a big...
That's a bit like Klopp getting a couple of wins, which he hasn't had, obviously, because we've been talking about.
Yeah.
It's a bit like him going on a bit of a roll and going, I'm invigorated.
it really is daft. It makes no sense at all. To be the manager of a team the size of Barcelona and to say you've had enough at the end of the season, you have to have a real good reason for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And to turn around in such a short space of time and go, well, I've changed my mind, makes no sense whatsoever. Absolutely none.
Look, Tuchel could win the Champions League, but he's still going to leave at the end of the season. We'll see how it all plays out next year. For Frank, please, how would you deal with it if you're a centre-back at Manchester United? The current lot don't know what to do, so need a World Cup winner's advice.
Well, I think tonight, Casemiro... played sometimes, you know, as a centre-back, and I enjoyed it because you can feel that he has something there. He understands and anticipates and he's very good. Well, I have most centre-backs that you see at the Manchester United, they are international players. So they should know what to do. I think maybe the pair never works. Maybe they pick the wrong players. I don't know. I have no explanation to see how it doesn't work and why it doesn't work. But it's the same with Di Zazi and Badiashil. It doesn't work. Where it works for them when they were in Monaco, perfectly, and they were younger. So it's something you have to find. Don't forget that having two pairs of centre-backs, if you don't have a right-back or a left-back or a very good and a good midfield and a good goalkeeper, it doesn't work either. It's a sport. It's a team sport. That's what it is. It's a balance that you have to find between the lines and in all positioning. Otherwise, it doesn't work, and you will accuse some players to be the weakest link, where maybe they're not the only reason.
For Craig, which project would you rather take over?
Well, there's only two clubs involved here.
Well, we've got another one. Another one's been thrown in for some reason.
I haven't even looked at the question.
Chelsea, Manchester United or West Ham?
How's West Ham in?
I don't know why West Ham are there. Maybe they just wanted a three, make it tidier.
West Ham are sitting eighth. If they're not happy with that.
Right. Well, let's...
Which project would I rather take over?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely Manchester United. Well, they've got people that have come in that are going to, you would think, weed out the people that have been making bad decisions.
Yeah, Chelsea have brought in the people that make the bad decisions.
The other team in West London. I don't know what's happening there.
Final question to you, Frank. Have you tried the new cookie croissant that is apparently the new rave in Paris?
I don't eat croissant anymore. You know, I take care. I'm 56. You know, I take care of my body. I don't need any pastries.
Shut up. When you were here, Frank, you used to go to the pastry shop here all the time.
Yeah. Well, when in America.
Yeah, but that was 2 years ago, and I try to be nice, you know, but I don't do it anymore. I try to eat properly, but no, I never. I mean, I never tried the. I know the croissant. And the cookie croissant doesn't ring a bell to me. No, it doesn't work, you know. You are either a cookie or croissant, you know. it doesn't work that way.
Frank, that's overrated looking after yourself. I mean, I've been putting all kinds of stuff into my, my body.
Look at Frank. Look tan, beautiful, Stevie.
Look. Croissants. Men's tie.
We know. Listen, we know you don't.
Okay.
All at the same time.
Hasn't done me any.
Hasn't caused any problems for me. Stevie, you only have fantastic jeans, and I don't. Yeah, that's it. You are capable of eating everything.
Where do you stand on croissants?
I don't stand on them. I eat them.
You like them? That's okay.
Aye.
Not too fancy.
Here,
and it's croissant with some cheese and
mince,
turkey in it. Nothing wrong with that.
What reaches me? You didn't like the breakfast choice?
Oh, because Shaq had Eggs Benedict.
Yeah, Eggs Benedict. What a waste of time, that is.
What a waste of time. What you want is a good sausage.
Waste of time.
Yeah.
That is nice food.
We'll be back. Are you in tomorrow, Stevie? Doesn't know.
No.
Right, that was a silly question.
No.
Kay will be here tomorrow to reflect on Manchester City against Brighton. Be sure to join her.
Arnie Slot.
Tomorrow.
Big.
Or Arnie.
Huge.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.